Hello and welcome to Folk Tongues, conversations with foreigners living in France. I'm Derek Rawson, I'm from Australia, but I've been living in France for more than 10 years now, first in Paris, now in Poitiers. I started this podcast as a way of rediscovering my love of France and French culture. With my guests, I delve into all aspects of living in France, from language and culture, to meeting locals and discovering the food, giving you a glimpse of what daily life in France is really like, at least from a foreigner's perspective. We also talk about our home countries too, so not only will you learn about life in France, you'll also hear about life in other countries around the world as well. In this episode, number 16 of the Forked Tongues Adventure, and the first conversation in a very long while, I speak with Kerry Varro from the US. I first met Kerry on a rainy Saturday morning on the sideline of our son's soccer match. He heard me speaking English with my son and introduced himself. And being such an open, friendly and fearless guy, when I asked him if he'd be willing to be a guest on my podcast, he said yes straight away. Our conversation covers many of the usual Forked Tongues subjects, learning the language, food, making French friends, but also some unexpected topics that I'll let you discover, as I did, as our discussion ambles easily along its own pathways. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. So welcome to the Forked Tongues, Kerry. It's a real pleasure to have you here. It's the first conversation I've held in a long time. It's been too long, so thanks for helping me launch or relaunch Forked Tongues.
Well, thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to our chat. So, to start, why don't you tell me about where you're from in the US? Because, well, before we talk about France, let's talk about the US and, yeah, your background.
So, I was born in Oregon, Eugene, Oregon. I was born in the US, but my parents are both Mexican. So, they met each other there and then had three kids. And then I lived there for 19 years. And then I met my wife, which is from Poitiers, actually. And when we met, she told me, like, I don't want to jump into something and just, you know, after 10 months, be like, all right, thank you for everything, goodbye. So after 19 years of living in the U.S., I came over to Poitiers.
Okay. Going way back, growing up in the U.S., do you learn about France? Do you learn much about other countries? Did you have, you know, ideas? Do you remember?
No, not really. I mean, the U.S. were really bad with history and with, like, geography. So, like, for me, France was just Paris. And, well, a little bit of Marseille, we learn, you know, just, like, the basic stuff. But, no, we're really, really bad with, like, geography.
Did you learn any French at school?
No, not at all. I took the easy way. I took Spanish.
Yeah, right. So you speak Spanish fluently, I suppose?
Yeah, yeah.
Your parents always spoke Spanish, too?
Yeah, we weren't allowed to speak English at home.
What happened if you spoke English? Or you didn't?
I mean, we'd try, but they'd just be like, this is a Mexican household, so we speak Spanish, so... And that's actually a good thing because, like, I have cousins that don't really speak good Spanish because, you know, the parents weren't, like, strict on it. So it's actually a good thing that they were strict about it.
Did you have friends from Mexican backgrounds as well in Eugene, Oregon? Or?
Yeah, yeah, a lot. I mean, what's funny is in the U.S., like, you know, people, well, I mean, you do, like, in school get mixed together, but you always have, like, the Latinos, the Americans, and then... You know, like really separated by groups.
So I was just wondering what a Mexican household in Eugene, Oregon is like. What does that mean?
Food is really important. Mexican food is really important. Spicy food is really important as well. Yeah, like I said, I mean, I think us as like the kids would bring like the American friends and, you know, have like my parents like hang out with the American people. And, you know, because we had like American friends, American neighbors, so... You know, we would, like, bring them more over, but, you know, like, they really stay in, like, community, you know, and, like, in between them. And there's not a lot of them that, like, go out of their way, you know, to, like, interact. Well, I mean, they have to interact with the Americans, but, like, make friendships or, you know, things like that.
So how old were you when you met your wife?
19.
Okay. What language did you speak together when you first met?
That's the funny part is we actually spoke Spanish at the beginning. Because she met my brother first, and they used to speak to each other in Spanish. And so when I started talking to her, I'm like, well, she speaks Spanish, so we'll speak Spanish. And so it was really funny because she actually learned Spanish from Spain and from Madrid. And so she had the accent, like the S, like, you know, she would pronounce the S. And I thought it was kind of cute, you know. And then after like 15 weeks of talking to each other, she was like, you know, I actually came to the U.S. to learn English, not Spanish, so... We should speak English. And so I was like, all right. And so it was really weird to change, but once we made the change, we speak English and French to each other.
Okay. So when did you start learning French?
When I got to France, so in 2013, okay. Almost 10 years ago. All
right. How did you go about that?
It was not easy. I went 3 months to the University of Poitiers to learn French. And because when I came here, I was 19, didn't have a career, didn't have anything going for me. And so my wife was like, well, we're going to sign you up for school so you can learn like the basics, learn French and learn the language. So I was supposed to go for a year. I ended up only going 3 months. And when I started, like, it was really hard because the French language is not very easy. Mm-hmm. And it's very different. But I think, like, I was really lucky to speak Spanish because since they're Latin languages, they have, you know, they have a lot of stuff in common. And when I started, like, I didn't want to because, like, I was scared of people making fun of me, you know, and of how I spoke it, my accent. And then, after like 2 weeks, you know, I told myself, I was like, you know, I've never been scared of anything in my life. Like, why should I start now? You know? Mm-hmm. And so I just said, let's go. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. So you only stayed 3 months at the university. Was that because you were acing all the lessons or you got sick of it? What happened?
No. Well, the thing is that like I came here like with my own money, you know, I was working in the US and in like the summer we did like Spain and Portugal with my wife and like I spent a lot of my money. And so after 3 months I had like no money to my name and I was never like started working at the age of 13, always had money in my pocket. And I told my wife, I was like, if I'm going to stay here, like I got to find a part-time job or find a way to make some money. Cause like, I can't be like this. And so at that time, her parents had a construction company and her dad offered me, he's like, well, I can offer you a job, but it has to be full-time. You can't come part-time, you know, because you'd have to go to the work site. And so I told him, well, all right, let's do it. And so I actually went home for Christmas. And then when I came back in January, I started construction.
Was that a good school for your French and life in France?
Not at all, because we were 40 employees, so 38 Portuguese, me as an American, and an English guy.
Okay.
So that year, well, actually those like following 5 months, I learned Portuguese faster than I learned French.
Your wife, she's French, but is she Portuguese?
From Portuguese parents, yeah.
Oh, it's a very multicultural family then.
Yeah. So we both like speak all like the four languages.
Impressive. Well, we'll talk about that and about your kids. I know you have kids and what languages you speak with them. But what I wanted to ask you first was your level in French after the 3 months. Did you feel comfortable?
No, I mean, you learned the basics and it was really difficult because like, I couldn't carry a conversation. And what's really hard is when French people speak to each other. You know, they speak fast and then, well, there's the slang, there's, you know, like the stuff you use in like day to day. So it's not things like that you use in school, what they teach you in school, you know, so it was not easy because like, you know, being at a table surrounded by people that speak French and you're just sitting there like everybody's laughing and you don't understand what people are saying. So that was hard. But no, I think what really helped me was the second year when I started baking. I actually went to baking school, started working in a bakery, working with French people. So that helps a lot more.
What made you decide to go into baking?
Well, I wanted to find a career. Well, construction was minimum wage and hard labor. And when I was working in the U.S., I was doing hard labor, but paid very well. So I told my wife, if I'm going to stay here, like I want to find something different. Because I'm not going to continue like to do hard labor, you know, for minimum wage. Well, the SMIC.
Mm. What is that? What does that work out in?
In the U.S.
Or in France? What is, for listeners know, what's the minimum wage in France?
I think it's like 1,200, something like that.
Per month.
Give or take, per month.
Yeah.
And when you're just young and, I mean, I think it could be enough. But, you know, when you're used to like a different... How do you say, like a different country, a different pay, and you know you can make more, you know there's more out there, you're like, yeah, you know, it's not enough.
Mm. But baking seems to be, it's so sort of typically French. I don't know, it wasn't at all intimidating to say, I'm going to learn baking in France, or maybe that's the ideal place to learn baking.
The baking idea actually came from my father-in-law, because when I was in the U.S., I either wanted to be a nurse, because they get paid well, or I wanted to be a kitchen chef because I loved cooking. And so when we were looking for ideas, my father-in-law, he actually told me, because at the end of my wife's year in the U.S., they came to visit her. We went up to Seattle all together, and my wife found a French bakery. And so it had been a year that she hadn't ate anything that was French, so she's like, let's go. So we go, show up at 8 in the morning. The place was packed. There was a big line. And then we're like, well, we'll come back in 2 hours. It's going to be, you know, calm. And so we go back, same thing, packed, long line. And so when we were looking for ideas, my father-in-law was like, well, we saw that French bakeries work in the U.S., so why don't you go to school to become a baker? And that way, when you want to go back home, you have something that's going to work. So we're like, all right, let's do it.
Sounds like a solid idea. Mm-hmm. So who was in your class at baking school?
Well, the thing is that here in France, like, usually people start like at 14, 15 years old, and I was 21. So I was a 21-year-old with, like, yeah, from like 14 to 16-year-olds in my class.
Okay.
So it was kind of weird. Like, I mean, I was 21. I told myself, like, schooling's over, you know. And the thing is that, no, it wasn't over. And so going back to school, and especially when young people, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. What were those relationships like with your classmates and teachers?
Well, my wife tells me that I adapt easily to situations. So, I mean, with the students, well, the people in my class, it was not really hard because, you know, like, I try to get along with everybody and adapt to, like, you know, the situation I am. But the really hard part was, the French part, because I had only started learning French for a year. So, I mean, you pretty much learn French for a year and then you go directly into, like, kind of like high school level, you know.
So a steep learning curve, which I'm sure you managed pretty well, but with a bit of stress.
Oh, yeah, it was difficult because after a year, I started, you know, like I could understand almost everything, but writing is a whole other situation because, like, speaking is one thing, but writing the language is really difficult.
So was it a theoretical course as well as being a practical course?
Yeah, because we had, like, French, history, all that, and then the baking part. So you have, yeah, the practical part is baking and all the technical, like, terms and all that.
The history part, that was the history of baking or the history of France?
No, it's like regular school, just, yeah, the history of France, of the world, and yeah.
Okay, interesting. How long did that last?
I actually went to school for 2 years to get a CAP, like the first diploma as a baker. And then after that, I did the BIPE, which is a higher diploma, and that was another 2 years, so a total of 4 years.
Yeah. Serious business.
Well, yeah, like I said, I never thought I would go back to school, but I did.
Mm-hmm. And overall, would you say it was a worthwhile experience or an enjoyable experience?
Yeah, most definitely. Like, you learn so much. You have to push yourself to, like I said, the thing is that, well, I had a high school diploma in the U.S., so, like, I had, you know, some knowledge. And so the thing is that when you have, like, a test in front of you in French and you know the answers and you know what you're reading, but you can't reply or, like, answer, you're like, it's really nerve-wracking. You're like, gosh, like, I know what I want to, I know the answer, but you can't just, I mean, you can't write it. So that's really difficult.
And who are the kids in the class? Were you the only foreigner?
Yeah, in my class I was. Yeah, I was the only foreigner. And I mean, the thing is that's what I explained to, like, you know, I talked to my American friends, is that usually people, when they start, like, baking school or, like, stuff like that, is because they don't really want to, like, keep going to school. They want to start working and school is not really their thing. So they either choose, like, a manual job, you know. So, like, there's, like, maybe one person in my class that was really like, oh, I want to bake. This is really what I want to do. And most of them was just like, oh, this is what I have to do.
Right. And after the studies, how easy was it to find work?
Very easy. Like, that's what's interesting is, like, every bakery I went to apply to, they were like, can you start tomorrow? I'm like, I guess so. I mean, you know, and so, yeah.
So how did you choose? Or what bakery did you choose? Where was your first job in France?
As an actual baker?
Yeah.
I started, can we say, I started at Feuillet.
Mm-hmm.
And I did 2 weeks, and it was not really, not really my thing, because like the pressure was like really big, really high, and they expect, like, I was fresh out of school, and so, you know, you're not used to having a, like, you know, all the responsibility on you. You usually have some, like, you know, your tutor, you know, that's there for you to, you know, if you make an error or like make a mistake, they're there to help you, you know. And like they're just like, you gotta go faster, you gotta, and especially like usually like every bakery has their own method of, you know, making bread or, you know, making stuff. And so like from one bakery to another, like nothing's the same. And so when you show up to a new bakery and they have different machines, they have different ways of making, and they're just like, you got to go as fast as our employees. You're like, well, I don't know what I'm doing, you know? So
the Feuille, it's a big, well-known bakery here in Poitiers. Is it a part of a chain? Or?
Yeah. It's a franchise, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that didn't last all that long then. What
lasted happened? 2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I was not, yeah, like I said, I was happy every day going there. So, you know, I started looking for something else. And then I found what they call Ma Boulangerie Café. And then I stayed with them for 4 years. And yeah.
And so you were head baker, part of a team. What's it like in the behind the scenes of a bakery?
Well, that's the thing is that, well, the first job was just as a baker. And then when I started working for my new employers, 2 weeks after, they came up and they're like, well, we watched you work for 2 weeks we're looking for a manager for a bakery. Do you want to be a manager? And I was like, what was funny is that told me the guy that's doing it doesn't have experience. I didn't say anything, but in my head, I was like, well, I'm fresh out of school. I don't have much experience myself. So I was like, let's do it. And so they gave me the job and I kept it for...
And that was in a different bakery?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And your French at this time was perfect or very, very good?
Yeah, it got a lot better. So that was like, so my fifth year in France. So yeah, it was a lot better. I mean, that's what I tell everybody is that either you go out of your way, you learn and you make efforts to pick up the language, or you stay at home and don't do much.
So in the bakery, did you feel welcomed, appreciated, accepted as an American?
Well, like the first year, it's hard because like I said, I couldn't follow conversations. I didn't understand everything. So it's kind of sad because like when people would go on break, like I would go kind of on break on my own, or I would like go into the locker rooms and be like, oh, I'm just going to go here. Because the thing is that I didn't understand everything. So it was kind of, yeah, it was not easy. The first year was not easy. But I mean, like I said, afterwards, you guys just got to kick yourself and be like, let's go, man. Like, you know, let's do this. And then you start understanding everything. And especially like the first and second year, you listen to what people say to you. You know, you like look at them and you listen, you pay attention, and then you start repeating what they say. You know, and like, all right, they speak like this, I'm going to speak the same.
We hear that in kitchens, the kind of environment, the atmosphere is really intense. It's sort of, like a real pressure cooker, I guess, pun intended. What's it like in a bakery? Is it the same kind of pressure?
Yeah. It is because you have multiple things going at the same time, and you got bread in the oven, you got your machines going. And the thing is that French people, I mean, bread is really important. And so bakeries open at 6:30 in the morning, and you have to have everything ready at 6:30 in the morning. So it's just go like early in the morning. It's a rush.
What time do you start?
It depends. The earliest I've started is like 2 in the morning.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, hard to continue to do that for year after year, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, I was actually lucky. As an apprentice, they usually don't make you start really early, because it's usually the actual bakers, you know, that do that. And so, you know, I would start like at 5, 6, 7 in the morning. So it's not too bad as a baker. But yeah, actually, when I started being like actual certified baker and, you know, working, first job was like 4 in the morning. And then like the earliest was like, yeah, 2:30 in the morning.
Right. What did you enjoy making the most or doing the most in the kitchen?
I would say the vinoiserie, because they're good. And it's really technical, you know, like we call it puff pastry in English. And yeah, it's because here in France, I mean, we have to know that like 90-95% of the bakeries actually don't make them. You know, like here in Poitiers, when I first started looking for a boss, you know, to start baking, I went to a lot of bakeries And the problem was, since I didn't speak French, like, my wife had to speak for me. And people would just say no. Like, no, we're not looking for anybody. And so I had to, like, go knock on a lot of doors. And our first question was, like, do you guys make your own vinoiserie? And most of them were no. Like, right. Yeah, we didn't. When we were looking, we didn't find any.
So how does that work then? There's like a big sort of industrial kitchen somewhere that supplies.
Yeah. You have a lot of places that make them, and you buy them frozen, and then you put them in chambre de fermentation, but in English, I don't actually know. But you put them to rise, and then yeah, it's really easy.
Okay, right.
Yeah, so you just have to make them, you know, take them out of the freezer, put them on the rack, and then yeah. The job is done.
Yeah, right. It's a bit disappointing to hear that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the thing is that a lot of people are not aware of that. Like, when I tell people that, they're like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah.
You're right. So there's only a handful of bakeries in Poitiers that make their own.
Yeah, I think you can count them on one hand.
What about bread? Is it the same situation, or do most bakeries bake their own bread?
No, well, that's the thing, is that if you call yourself a boulangerie, a bakery, you have to make your bread from A to Z. You know, it's the law. Okay. Or else you can't put that on your bakery. You can't put boulangerie.
I remember the first time we met, we were talking about your job, and I think you're saying that you were given freedom to create some new bread and new bakery products. Do you have memories of that, or favorites, things that you...
Yeah. One thing I was really proud of and happy was the brioche feuilletée. Yeah, so it's just like the brioche dough worked like a croissant, so like into a puff pastry. Yeah, so like I kind of stole it from Fayette because, you know, I worked. And like I said, I mean, when I went to Fayette, I was like, I'm looking for a bakery that makes everything homemade. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, everything's homemade. And then when you go in there, they're like, yeah, everything is homemade in our factory. I'm like, so it's not homemade. And so I did a lot of trial and errors, like, with it. And then when I got to the organic side of the bakery, everything's homemade. And yeah, so, like, I tried to make it. And the recipe of the brioche was excellent. So I was like, all right, I'm going to try it. And, yeah, it worked.
Yeah, and it was a bestseller. Did it do well? And
well, yeah, the funny part is that we had clients come in, and they're like, we actually prefer this one than from Fayette. And you're like, all right. So, I mean, you know, it feels good, you know, when people, they're like, oh, this is so delicious, this is so good. Or, you know, when you take some home and you have your friends try it, and you're like, yeah, I put that together. And so, yeah, it's pretty.
Did you ever try or find any inspiration in sort of American or Mexican kind of cuisine? Or
no, not really. I mean, there's like, well, like hamburger buns, just simple stuff, hot dog buns. But, you know, I think like each thing has its place, you know, and like mixing everything up is just, yeah, I don't know. It's not really my thing, you know. But like, for example, like when I told my parents, yeah, I would love to open a bakery in the U.S., they're like, yeah, and we'll put like some Mexican stuff in it. I'm like, no, you know, just keep everything separate.
Yeah. Do you miss home cooking from Oregon?
Yeah, well, a lot of people ask me that, and they're like, do you miss American food? I'm like, I miss Mexican food. I love my mom's cooking. You know, that's what I miss the most, and that's what I tell people. I mean, American food, besides hot dogs, hamburgers, and barbecue, I mean, you really don't have American dishes, you know? And everything comes from around, you know, like, there's Domino's. Well, Italian, it's pizza, you know, and... you have Olive Garden, it's Italian, you know, and stuff like that, and American food. But the thing is that the U.S. knows how to, like, take stuff that works and try to make it better, or, you know, change it a little bit. Mm. People are like, oh, burgers, but if you find a place that makes really, really good burgers, like, it's some good stuff.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. There's a guy on... he's the like burger scholar. Can't remember his name. George Motz. I don't know if you've ever seen any of his videos on YouTube.
No.
He's like a burger historian, but he kind of makes them and talks about the history. It's really interesting. What dishes does your mom make that you miss?
There's tamales. There's one thing I love is called chilaquiles. It's really simple. And that's like my favorite thing.
Can you explain that?
Chilaquiles? Yeah. It's, I got to tell people, it's simple. It's just like corn tortillas. Usually it's like they're getting old. You grab them, you break them up, you fry them in a pan. And then you make a hot sauce, homemade hot sauce. And then when your tortillas are nice and crispy, you grab your sauce, pour it on top of the tortillas, and they become soft. And then when you serve it, you put sour cream and cheese on top of it. And yeah, like I said, it's really simple. But
sounds like comfort food.
Oh, yeah. And it's horrible because when I go, like, I just eat a whole pan.
I was going to say, too, it doesn't sound like something you can find in France, or I've never seen in France.
I mean, you kind of can cheat your way to it and, like, do it with, like, chips, you know, like tortilla chips that you find in the store, but it's not the same.
Do you find any Mexican food in France?
You can, but it's, like, you know, El Paso, like, chips and, like, sauces like that, but... I mean, you can't compare it to homemade.
have you been to Paris? Have you traveled around?
Oh, yeah, I've moved around a lot. But, like, I mean, that's the problem with Mexican food is that it's spicy. And usually, how they say in Mexico, a taco without salsa is not a taco. And the thing is that we add, like, hot sauce to our food. And if you don't like spicy food, Mexican food is probably not the best thing for you, you know? But yeah, I've moved around and you can find Mexican places, but it's not the same. No, not really.
And so how do you feel about French food?
French food. It's good. I mean, there's good wine, good cheese. That's some good stuff. But like actually French cuisine, like prefer like the, you know, like the authentic, you know, like raclette, boeuf bourguignon, things like that, tartiflette, mm-hmm. You know, but actually, like, really, how do you say gastronomy?
Gastronomic.
Yeah, gastronomic. Not really my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. You know, you have like really small, I mean, for an American, you know, that used to eating like a lot and good quantities, you know. And
who cooks at home, you or your wife?
We both do. But when I take over the kitchen, like, after a few days, my wife's like, well, I'm going to take over because, you know, like, I usually cook kind of greasy.
Okay. Is she cooking more Portuguese or more French or a mix of the two?
It's a mix of everything. Really, that's what's fun. I mean, when you have four cultures in the household, yeah, we mix it up.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, talking about family, yeah, you've got four kids?
Yeah, four boys.
Four boys. Yeah, right. So you got your hands full at home as well. What languages do you speak with them?
French and English.
French and English.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
How did you come to that decision? Was it a discussion?
Yeah, it was just natural. I mean, because, you know, my go-to language is English. My wife's go-to language is French. And the thing is that two languages is, I think, I mean, not a lot, but it's a good amount. And the thing is to, like, You have to be strict, you know. So if you mix everything together, I think it'd be complicated, you know. But I tell people that I learned two languages at the age of 19, so I think the kids with their whole lives they'll be able to pick them up.
Mm, yeah. And so I don't know if your family can visit here or you go to the U.S. very much. Do your parents speak Spanish to your kids?
No, they speak English. Yeah. Yeah, we see each other almost like every year, once a year. They speak English, but, you know, it's funny because they still try to slip in the Spanish. They're like, all right, say this in Spanish or, you know, speak to them in Spanish. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, your kids are young, I understand. Do they feel these four cultures at home, do you think? Or do they feel French from Poitiers?
When you ask them, I think they're proud to be French. But yeah, they for sure are affected by. I mean, I listen to home to American music, Mexican music, music from everywhere. The food the same. Like, it's funny, you know. When you tell them we're gonna have burritos, they say burritos, you know, or you know, they say, you know, in French you would say churros, but they say churros. So it's funny, yeah. You can for sure tell that. They affects them.
And how do they experience the U.S.? They get excited when they go there?
Oh, yeah. It's a big party. Yeah, when we go, it's just, you know, I mean, we get to see all my family, my friends, and what I love about the U.S. is when you come and visit, like, everybody's like, oh, we got you. We're paying. Like, you're not paying for anything. So, you know, and they take the kids everywhere, and, yeah, they love it.
When was your last trip?
In February.
Okay, great.
For a whole month.
Yeah, was that the first time in a while? So I know COVID kind of messed things up for families around the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. COVID was a big, had a big impact. But, yeah, almost 5 years, yeah, since we hadn't gone.
Did you notice changes?
Yeah, everything got expensive.
Right.
Yeah, I think COVID had something to do with that. But yeah, everything, like, before going to the U.S. was fun because, I mean, fun, like, it was cheaper because going out, eating out, activities were cheap. And now, like, it's pretty much the same as in France, or maybe a little bit more expensive.
And in terms of salaries, are they still higher in the U.S. than in France?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think people are paid more, and especially the big difference is, like, manual labor here in France is not paid well, and in the U.S. it's paid very well.
Coming back to France then, you said you've moved around a bit. What other regions of France have you visited? And maybe I should ask you as well, why did you end up in Poitiers? Is this where your wife's from?
Yeah, my wife was born in Poitiers, and so that's why we came here. But yeah, we've moved though. I mean, Paris is a must. We've been to Paris. We've been to, like, Brittany, Normandy, the south of France. I mean, we've done the whole Côte d'Azur. So Marseille, Nice, Cannes, all that. And then we've done the other side. Was like at the beginning, we did Saint-Jean-de-Luz, Bayonne, Biarritz. So yeah, we've moved around quite a bit.
But life in Poitiers is something, I don't know, Poitiers is not a big town.
It's not, but I mean, it's about the same size of, you know, Eugene from where I come from. So, I mean, it wasn't a big change. Weather is pretty much the same. Expect that in Eugene it rains a lot more. So, I mean, that didn't really shock me because I know there's people that, especially from Asia, they're shocked. They're like, rain, snow, like, what is this, you know? But no, that didn't really shock me. One thing, yeah, that's really big is the people, you know. Like, I tell people, like, people ask me, what do you miss from the U.S.? And I tell them, like, kind of like the spirit, you know. When you go to the store here, it's mostly like, hello, 5 euros, goodbye. In the U.S., when you go to the store, you go and, like, talking to people, you know, is really easy. And so, like, in the U.S., you show up to a store and you're like, oh, hey, how you doing? Like, I just got out of work, you know, and it's just, like, it's really simple stuff, but I think it means a lot, you know. And my wife's like, yeah, but what's the point? I'm like, well, I prefer someone that has a smile on their face in front of me than someone that's just like, you know, with no smile.
So it's not a language thing, it's a culture thing.
I believe so, yeah. So, yeah, I think that's like a big thing, but at first, like, you feel like, you know, when you come from another country, you get here. At least I had the impression that people were, like, looking at me from head to toe, like, you know. And then, I mean, then you get used to it. And it's funny because now when I go back to the U.S. and people are always like, hey, how you doing? Or people that you don't know at a store come up to you and how can I help you? You're like, hey, like, back up. And you're like, oh, wait, no, this is normal here, you know.
Yeah.
So it's funny because after 10 years, you start adapting to where you live, you know, and being and doing the ways, you know, of the people here.
I remember being a little bit shocked on a past trip to Australia. It was with the casual attitude of different people. I remember, I think it was one of the Qantas flight crew called me buddy. I said, you know, how are you going, buddy? Or something. I was kind of shocked. The French part of me was shocked.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I hear what you're saying. And have there been traps? But I mean, you said going to a shop is like, hello, 5 euros, goodbye. Have there been traps in terms of, you know, social etiquette, social interactions in France that you've had to learn to navigate? I know that I've, perhaps early days, I would perhaps ask a question without first saying hello, just to someone on the street or, you know, excuse me, blah, blah, blah. And they say, oh, whoa, bonjour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you have to say bonjour, or, well, especially working in the bakery, like when, I mean, you have people coming to you and buying stuff, you have to say bonjour, madame. I think, yeah, it's really important. You have to, like, when you show up somewhere, you have to say hello. But one thing I was really shocked here in France is that sometimes you show up to places and people working there don't even say hi to you. And you're like, I'm here, I'm going to most likely buy something, like, can you help me? And yeah, it's kind of, I think it's, like I said, coming from another country where, you know, people are like at your feet, ready to help you. And then here, when you show up to a store and like people don't even greet you, you're like, I think there's a problem.
Do you think that's changing in France as well? Is it becoming a bit, the service maybe improving?
I wouldn't say improving. Like, I mean, last night we went to the restaurant and like I said, I mean, I just came back from the U.S. and it's just amazing. Like customer service, they're just there for you. Like, you know, and here, like we went to the restaurant and you feel like you're bothering them. You know, when you ask them, can we get some water? They're like, yeah. You're like, okay, sorry. I'm, you know, I think that's your job, you know. And,
I won't ask you to tell me which restaurant it was, but what did you order?
I actually didn't get to order because I had to take care of the kids. They ordered me a burger, and it was funny because they're like, you would. I'm like, I didn't order that. I wanted seafood, but yeah, I actually got a burger.
Okay, and how was it?
It was good. Yeah, it was good.
One of the things I find interesting in France, obviously we talk a lot about food and French food, but in every restaurant, there's always a burger on the restaurant, on the menu.
Yeah.
Burgers are everywhere in France.
Yeah.
And I believe that France is the country in Europe with the most McDonald's restaurants.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I heard a few years ago, and I imagine it's still true.
Well, that's what I tell people. I think the U.S., I mean, probably all over the world, yeah, they have a big impact. And, you know, I always bring it back to baking. Like, today we have the snacking part, you know, like the sandwiches, quiche, all that. And I think I wasn't here 20 years ago, but I think the bakery there is today in France was not the same bakery there was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's all also, like, you know, influenced by the U.S.
What's it like eating in a restaurant with kids in France?
We usually don't. We usually get a babysitter, but especially four, it's not the last part. We don't do it. Yeah, we just, like, maybe, I mean, at noon, I mean, for lunch, if you're out or on vacation, why not? But at night, we usually avoid it.
Is it different to in the U.S. in terms of the way you're received and served?
Yeah, I believe so. Like, they always have, like, little, well, here too, I mean, the most part, but they always have, like, little toys or, like, you know, little books to draw on. And the thing, like I said, it all depends on the people working there. In the U.S., when you take your kids, like, never do you feel the person is, you know, the people are bothered by your kids. That here in France, if your kids make noise, they're like, they look at you. So, you know, you feel bad. You're like, oh, am I doing something wrong? Or are they bothering people, you know? So, yeah.
In terms of French culture, I know you play music, you like music. Do you like French music?
That's what I tell people, is that I'm not going to go and, like, search for it, you know, but if I hear it, like, I don't mind it. There's songs that I like, there's artists that I like. But yeah, and, like, music-wise, I usually go, like, more, like, English or Spanish. Yeah, like music.
So French music didn't help you at all in terms of learning French?
No. No, and like I said, when I first got here and, you know, driving in the car, like, I would put on the radio, and what helps is that they play a lot of English music, and so that was amazing, because, you know, I would get in the car, you know, you just spend the whole day listening to French, your head's turning, and you get in the car and you hear English, you're like, oh, this feels good.
Did you see French movies or things like that in the U.S.? Do you remember any French stuff from growing up?
No, not at all. I mean, well, usually it's funny is that now that I'm here and I speak the language, you notice it even more, but you always have a French actor and a French person in the movie, you know, speaking the bad English like this. You know, there's always this little French guy that comes out of nowhere, but, you know, so that you notice it. But no, like I said, we're really poor on, like, looking outside of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I tell people, is that when I came here, everybody is like, you're crazy, what are you doing, you're going to a country you don't know the language. And I told them, as a kid, I wanted to travel the world, I wanted to see the world, I had the opportunity to do it, so I was like, I'm going.
Have any of these friends or family come to visit you?
I've had, yeah, some family, especially for the wedding. Friends, I've had, yeah, two or three.
I should ask you what your wedding was like. A French, Portuguese, Mexican American wedding in here in Poitiers?
Yeah, we got married here in Poitiers.
How many guests did you have?
We're like between 80 to 90. And what was hard, I didn't have a lot of my family with me because, I mean, you know, it's a long trip, it's expensive. And so, yeah, I just had like a few family members, and then, yeah, a lot of Portuguese family, and then a lot of French friends. So, yeah, it was a big mix. But people told us that they loved it, they had fun. And I mean, especially like the music, you know, the music was really mixed between all the cultures. So that was really interesting.
That's one thing I have to say. I find most of the music played at French weddings rather terrible.
Really?
That's my personal opinion. Yes, it's a lot of stuff from the 70s and particularly 80s.
Yeah.
ABBA and Village People and stuff like that we may have listened to in Australia when I was in primary school, but usually, we don't listen to so much anymore. I don't anyway. So I'm so always surprised when that comes out at weddings or parties. Yeah,
it's hard to dance to.
Not for French people, but yeah. For me, yeah. You mentioned French friends at the wedding. Are friendships with French people different for you?
Well, like I said earlier, like going towards like French people is not the easiest thing. But one thing that, I mean, I've noticed and what we talk about with my wife is that in the U.S., it's very easy to communicate with people to, you know, break the ice. And you know a lot of people and you're like, oh, they're my friends. But when you really need them, they're usually not there. That in France, you take time, you know, to get in there to like create the friendship or the relationship. But once you get in there and, you know, they're there, like, you know, you can count on them, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I really appreciate, you know, about like French people is that, you know, it takes some work, you know, to create that relationship. But once it's there, like, it's usually pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. So it takes time.
Yeah.
Where did you meet your friends? Is it sort of part of being a parent and taking kids to school or through work?
Well, friends from the university. Yeah, from the university. Also, I played football, American football here. They have a team, the Dragon de Poitiers. So that was really, really fun. So the first year I played with them, won the championship. So
national championship?
Regional. Yeah. Okay. And so I never thought I would play football again, so that was amazing.
That sounds amazing. American football in France. How many teams in the regional in the region?
In the region, there're probably like 4 or 5. And then you actually have pro, the elite teams, yeah. So it's actually getting bigger. It's gotten bigger since I got here. And so yeah, so I mean, I still have friends from football, from school, from baking school, and then, I mean, co-workers, and then a lot of friends also from church, yeah.
I got to ask you more about American football in France. Who was playing? Who are the people in the team? Are they French people? Are they expats?
No, well, on our team, it was just locals, you know, just practicing a sport, you know, they sign up for football, or they have this, they like, you know, the U.S. or the sport, and so there's a team and people, you know, like sign up. And it's not the same because like the level, obviously, like football, we learn it from, you know, from an early age, and it's really like in the culture in the country. So you know, it's kind of like soccer here or rugby, so it's not as important as as the other sports. But like I said, the level is not really high, but it's still, I mean, it's nice to be able to, you know, play and have people that want to play. So
yeah. We talked before about burgers in France, but do you think there's like a general fascination with the U.S. and an attraction to the U.S. in France?
I don't know. I think it's more like worldwide, like, you know, the U.S., like music, movie-wise, sports-wise, they have a big impact. I don't know if it's because it's a big country. I don't know if it's because it's a newer country. I don't know what it is, but yeah, they, as an American, we have to seem to have a big impact on the world.
Would you say that people are usually sort of excited to meet you and to discover that you're from the U.S.? Is that something?
Well, what's funny is that people, when they ask me, like, where are you from? And I tell them, guess. And they're like, I don't know, like Latin America? And I'm like, well, I'm pretty brown, so I'm like, yeah, yeah. I was like, well, I was born in the U.S., but my parents are Mexican. And what's funny is because, like we were saying at the beginning, is that in the U.S., you're really separated by either race, by a lot of things. And when I met my wife, you know, I would, like, when I talked about myself, I would consider myself a Mexican. I was like, I'm Mexican, you know, because that's what people label you as. And ever since I moved to France and ever since I live here, I tell people I'm American, you know, and I'm proud to be American because I lived there my whole life. I visited Mexico 3 times, but I never lived there. And yeah, like now when I talk about myself, I was like, oh, I'm American. So yeah, when people are like, where are you from? I'm like, yeah, well, I'm American. I'm like, my name is Carrie. You know, I say it and my wife's like, why do you say it like that? I'm like, because that's my name. I'm not going to say Carrie like in French, you know.
Yeah, right.
So it's always funny, you know, to get people's reaction when you present yourself and, you know, my name's Carrie, I'm American, and yeah, usually starts a couple conversations.
Perhaps living outside our own country, we feel more American or Australian for me with the years as they pass and the distance between us and our home. Well, home isn't perhaps the right word, but yeah, between where we come from.
Yeah, we say in Spanish, there's no place like our own home.
Yeah, you wrote a song about that. I mean, I'm not going to ask you to sing it or play it now, but yeah, it was a beautiful song. So you obviously still feel, I don't know, drawn to the U.S.
Should I ask homesick?
You? Yeah. I mean, I hesitated to use the word home because I've been living in France for years now. I think it's probably close to 14 or so. So I shouldn't and can't really refer to Australia as home. France is home now, but How do you feel about that? Where's home? And yeah, do you feel homesick for the U.S.?
I mean, like I said, the first years were hard because, yeah, you miss a lot of things, the food, your family, all that. But I think when you start creating your own family and have your own kids, like, that's what's more important for me, you know? Like, at first, you know, the goal was just to go back home. But, you know, once you start having kids, you start thinking about them and what's more important for them, what's going to be better for them. And so now, like, here or there, you know, I just want them to be happy. I just want them to be well. And so, I mean, I miss it. Yeah, I miss it a lot. It's a part of me. Like I wrote in my song, you know, it's the place that made me. You know, so that I'll never forget. But, I mean, like I said, I don't regret it. I don't regret coming here because I've learned a lot. I've discovered a lot. I've seen a lot. And like I say, in Spanish, we have a lot of saying that go and see yourself so people, you know, can't tell you what they want. You know, like go and see and like and discover things and, okay, you know.
What's the expression in Spanish?
What is it?
I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah. It's like, I was going to say in French, it's really short. It's a pa que no me cuenten. So, you know, so they can't tell me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you a French citizen?
No.
No? Do you think you'll ever be one? Apply to be one?
French administration is complicated. So it's like a lot of paperwork. I could ask for it, but for now I have a residence card for 10 years. So we'll see. I don't know.
Do you think you'll get American citizenship for your kids? Is that possible?
They are American citizens. Okay. Yeah. 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 Well, they got their, yeah, they have their everything, passports, birth certificates. Yeah.
So when you travel to the US, do they travel as US citizens or as French citizens? Which passports do you use? Yeah.
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if you have a layover in Europe, the French passport's easier. And then once you start heading to the US, the American passport is a lot easier. So yeah, we take both.
Makes sense. You mentioned the church before. Has that been an important part of your life here in Poitiers?
Yeah, because I'm Catholic and it's a universal religion and it's everywhere. And what's amazing is that no matter where you go in the world, it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. So it's, even if you don't speak the language, you can follow and you know exactly what's going to happen during the mass, we go, you know, every Sunday, and like I said, that's, we made a lot of friends there, and you know, because we share the same thing, the same faith, and yeah, so yeah, it was a big part of my life in the U.S. you know, especially from a Hispanic parents, and yeah, it still is.
Mm-hmm. And so the community is very welcoming then, the Catholic community in Poitiers.
Like I said, I mean, you share something that's really big, you know, together. So yeah, that's it's kind of easy, you know, to fit in.
So every Sunday, okay.
And
you go with the kids, of course.
Yeah, we usually go to the cathedral because there's a lot of people with a lot of kids. Yeah, because if you go more into like the villages and small churches, it's usually elderly people, And so not a lot of kids, so yeah.
So that's the Cathedral of Saint-Pierre, is that
yeah.
the name? Okay, that's a, yeah. that's a beautiful, beautiful monument in Poitiers.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's amazing. And
that must be different to the US.
Oh yeah, it is. Like, that's what I tell people is that, I mean, in the US, if you want history, there is, because people are like, you guys don't have history. I'm like, yeah, we actually do. But obviously not as much as, you know, as Europe or France and stuff like that. I mean, we don't have castles and big cathedrals like that.
Not the old stones.
Yeah, that's what, you know, it's amazing. It's funny because now, like, after living here for so, like, for so long, you get used to it. But when you first get here, you're just, like, looking everywhere, you know, turning your neck, and there's a lot of things to see.
Mm-hmm. Does it change at all the kind of, I don't know about the religious feeling, but when you're sitting in a cathedral for Sunday Mass, is that different to being in a church back in Oregon and listening to the priest?
Like I said, I mean, you get used to it, but at the beginning, yeah, it's just amazing because it's just so big and so old and just the architecture, like you said, the stones, like, it's been there for centuries, you know? And yeah, it's amazing when you get, like I said, you just go inside and you just have to look up, you'll have to look everywhere, and there's just so many things to see, so many things to visit. And like, I actually had a person tell me, a good friend in the U.S., she's like, yeah, when I went to Europe, and she's like, I'm not religious or anything, but when you go into those places, you feel something, you know? And when I got here and I put things together, I was like, the thing is that, you know, I told my wife, I was like, imagine how many prayers, how many celebrations, how many masses have been, you know, here. And I think that has a lot, you know, to do with that.
Well, it's been a really great conversation. I've really enjoyed chatting with you this morning, Kerry. So, yeah, thanks for being a part of Forked Tongues.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Thanks again, Kerry. It was a real pleasure. So I've been wondering how to finish this episode for some time now, really ever since Kerry came to my house to chat. After we spoke, he picked up my guitar. I have to admit, I'm a complete beginner, and my guitar had been gathering dust for months, and played me a few songs, covers, Johnny Cash and the like, that I recorded, but for copyright reasons don't think I can play here. But thinking about Kerry's playing, and the song he wrote about the US, the place that made him, reminded me of another song that I love, about distant homelands. More precisely, a distant Mexican homeland, the song Canción Mixteca, a Mexican folk song written by a Oaxacan composer, José López Alavés, and arranged by Ry Cooda for use in the Wim Wenders film Paris, Texas. Paris, Texas. Is that enough of a French connection? Now, I don't think I can play the song either, but I am going to read the English translation of the lyrics while listening, myself, to the start of the song in the background. Canción Mixteca. How far I am from the land where I was born. Immense nostalgia invades my thoughts. And seeing myself so lonely and sad, like a leaf in the wind, I want to cry, I want to die of sorrow. O land of sun, I yearn to see you. Now that I'm so far from you, I live without light and love. And seeing myself so lonely and sad, like a leaf in the wind, I want to cry, I want to die of sorrow. Okay, now I'm not saying that's how either Kerry or I feel, but it's a beautiful song, in the original Spanish, of course. And sung by Harry Dean Stanton, who plays the main character in the film Paris, Texas. So I encourage you all to have a listen. I've even put a link to the song on YouTube in the episode description to make it easy for you. You might even be inspired to watch the film, which brought the song to the world's attention, if you haven't already, that is. I think I saw the film when I was a teenager, certainly too young to appreciate it fully, so plan to watch it again myself. Now that I'm in my 40s, married, and a father of two. I'm sure the time is right. Anyway, one more thing before I sign off. Don't forget that Forked Tongues has an email address for any questions, comments, suggestions, anything that might tickle your fancy to send me, within limits, of course. It's easy. ForkedTonguesPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time.